Wang is translated as empowerment. And empowerment means you are empowered. Generally speaking, the particular Sambhogakaya manifestation of the Buddha and all the practices that are related with it, until you are empowered, until you receive the empowerment, you are not empowered to learn the teachings or practice the sadhana, visualization, mantra recitation, etc. And after receiving the empowerment, then you are empowered to do so. So that is the empowerment. Empowerment at the same time also means that through such practice, the immediate outcome for a great practitioner, fully dedicated practitioner, should be that one will be free from the suffering of samsara, suffering in a sense which are in a superficial manner associated with lower realm, such as hell, preta, and animal. And in a long term, in an ultimate sense, you will be free from suffering of samsara. And suffering of samsara is something which we think we know very well. We should be correct in thinking this way, but sometimes we need some support and some clarification on this. Because if we know what is the suffering of samsara indeed, then why are we so attracted to the samsara? Why we are so involved in the samsara? Even we try, sort of, everything to be free from samsara, in a way, nevertheless, we seem to be tainting or diluting our means of being free from samsara by cause and conditions to be in samsara. So this way, we have to be reminded from time to time. In samsara, if you sincerely, wisely, honestly look into it, there is nothing that is truly desirable. There is nothing. You can think of this achievement, you can think of that achievement, you can think of this pleasure, you can think of that pleasure, so-called achievement. And you can think of this and that glory in samsara. But at the end, everybody will end up being nothing but a handful of dust. That is what we are going to be. Handful of dust. Sooner or later, that's what we are going to be. So that is which part of us going to be handful of dust. The samsaric part of us going to be handful of dust. But essence of each one of us not going to be handful of dust. So if we are so taken by the interest, our interest in samsara, then we are bringing ourselves so low, so that we are nothing more, nothing less than handful of dust. We can have the wealth of the world. We can have glory of the universe. We can be the most liked and most glorified person in the whole universe. But when we die, our body will remain there motionless, and our mind is carried away by the wind of karma with no control, no freedom whatsoever. And wherever it is going to manifest, that is what we call our next life, and that glorious person might manifest in the most unglorious manifestation. It is most likely because we worked out and we short-circuited all of our good karma of countless lifetimes for that samsaric glory. Therefore, this very special battery, expensive, super lithium battery, infralithium battery, very expensive. And now it became the battery which does not have any power in it, so its place is in dustbin. Not in normal dustbin, because this is not environmental friendly. Therefore, it will be put in a most unwanted, among the most unwanted materials. And it will be put in a designated dustbin, which is reserved for unwanted, inferior, harmful material. So that is what samsara will bring. Samsaric glory. Maybe sometimes samsara is so colorful, so musical, and so sweet outside, like a chocolate, like a violin, like a flower. Therefore, it is little bit hard to see the other side of it because we are being deceived. Intentionally or unintentionally, we are being deceived. But of course, the flower is beautiful, but just for 1 or 2 days. And violin makes very good sound, but you have to play it again and again and again and again. And the chocolate is very tasty, in fact, very likable, but you have to go to dentist more often when you have chocolate more often. And after some time, you will lose all your dear teeth, tooth, and you will be diabetic, and you might end up forget about chocolate, but not even able to eat rice. So this way, the fallacy of the samsara's colorfulness and attraction is very short-lived and exposed very quickly. The fallacy will never be recovered once it is exposed. So for Prince Das, Milarepa, and millions and millions of our great enlightened ones. When I say our, I'm not saying this as a, some kind of our sight and their sight, but I'm saying even those whose names and histories we know, we call that ours. And there is how many whose name and histories we don't know, and they definitely must be there. And they definitely have achieved same thing that Prince Siddharth and Milarepa, etc. have achieved. Therefore, when I say ours, I'm not saying this by excluding others, but by indicating that very few that we know, they are so many. Therefore, the others who we don't know naturally has to be enormous in number and countless actually. In samsara, I give you a very small example. Of course, I'm a monk, therefore I don't have this experience personally, but of course, I have this experience from people, from followers, from friends, from relatives, from strangers. And you are a father or you are a mother. You have something which is most dear, your son or your daughter. And how dear you hold your dear one to your heart. And how much you care for them. When the time comes, you have to leave them behind. And you wanted to look after them, but you cannot. When the time comes, you have to go helpless. And that is the samsara. And you might be most appreciated person and there will be tens of thousands of people who are protecting you when the time comes. They don't even know where you go. Forget about protecting. If they don't know where you are, how are they going to protect you? They can only sit there next to your body, dead body, and cry for you, which does not do anything, which does not benefit you for anything. And you will be facing your karma, and they can't do anything for you. Your father cannot do anything, your mother cannot do anything, your brother cannot do anything, your sister cannot do anything, your bodyguards cannot do anything, the whole universe cannot do anything for you. So that is the truth of the samsara. Now, ultimate benefit and essence of the practice is to be free from that samsara, so that you are not at the mercy of your shortcoming, your defilement. You become your master. You know, it is very interesting because even in samsara, people say, I am my own master when they have a business and few employees. They are not their own master. They are actually the servant of their employees. They have to work very hard to prepare what their employee is supposed to do, and they have to pay them, so on and so forth. But the really being master of yourself is, you know where you want to go, and you are able to go there. You can be, you know what you want to be, and you can be that. You want to be free from samsara, suffering of samsara, you are able to do that. You want to help sentient beings to be free from suffering of samsara, you can do that. So that is the definition of being your own master. Even Dharma seems to be spreading all over the world, and some articles say that Vajrayana Buddhism is the fastest growing religion in the world. I don't know. I don't know that is true or not. I don't think so. But that is what people say. So I, as a Vajrayana Buddhist, supposed to like it, supposed to be proud of it, supposed to be very happy about it, but I'm a very strange person from that point of view. Actually, when I hear that, it makes me shiver. It makes me scared rather than happy about it. Because how many of us who have been in the Dharma for 3 decades, 4 decades, and in fact many of us born in the Dharma, not just became Dharma follower, but born in the Dharma. How many of us really know what is Dharma? How many of us really know how to practice Dharma? And how to make sure Dharma will remain Dharma? I can be wrong, but I see right in front of my nose so many times, not only once, but so many times, Dharma is used for non-dharmic purposes again and again and again and again. With some kind of ego so big, so that it is almost, looks like that's what Dharma is for. It is frightful. It is dreadful actually. And from that point of view, I hope you understand why it makes me scared rather than happy when people write that Vajrayana Buddhism is the fastest growing religion in the world. I hope you understand me. If people write Vajrayana Buddhism is the slowest growing religion in the world, then I will be in peace. I will be quite happy, because it is not so easy. It is very, very deep. Therefore, the motivation, the lineage, the devotion, the compassion, the faith and trust, everything has to be there, comprehensive. And how can you be comprehensive when you can't even comprehend one of those? Few things I have said. Devotion, compassion, faith, trust, lineage. Only five things I have mentioned here. Even we can't comprehend one of them clearly, and even we can't believe in one of them clearly, then how can we comprehend all of them? If we can't comprehend all of them, then what kind of very fast-growing dharma we have, you know? So I sincerely hope that the particulars that I have shared here related with the purpose of the empowerment, I hope this will make all of you more encouraged about dharma, because you understand more, and also not become that much kind of propagation minded, so that we have to propagate, we have to propagate. How many people we managed to make Buddhist in this week? How many people we managed to make Buddhist in past 20 years? And you know, I hope that I can take that part of your thinking away from you, so that the true Buddhism, true Vajrayana, can be established in people's true primordial essence, rather than in head, and then become expert in using Buddhism and Vajrayana for non-Vajrayana and non-Buddhist purposes and interests. And with very sincere and with very pure motivation, I wish you to participate in this very sacred empowerment, preparatory this morning, and actual empowerment this afternoon, and many empowerment to come. And I told you five things. Truly cherishing, appreciating, and upholding lineage. One. Same thing for devotion. Two. Same thing for compassion. Three. Same thing for faith. Four. Same thing for trust. Five. And faith and trust about all of it. For example, how many people truly believe in karma? How many people truly believe in life after death? So, it is of course quite easy, quite convenient, but believing in your heart, that is what really comes from maturity, comes from purification, comes from merit, and wisdom derives from purification and accumulation. Accumulation of merit, accumulation of wisdom. So I felt this is important, so I shared this. I like to share this in this morning. Now I will say this in Tibetan. There's one thing I somehow skipped my mind, and I mentioned in Tibetan. What I'm saying here is, it became quite wordy, but now I summarize everything into a simple phrases. So that is, we should make sure that our great fortune, our great karma, to encounter Vajrayana sacred transmission of all kinds. I'm not talking only about here, everywhere, and we should make sure that this becomes fruitful from all sides. Our dharma activity should contribute for the liberation of all sentient beings to reach Buddhahood. Our dharma activity means practice, transmission, everything should contribute for the long life of the sacred living dharma for hundreds of thousands and millions of years. Our dharma activity should not become, you know, this is unauspicious things to say, but I have to say it because it is my duty to say. So our dharma activity, our involvement in dharma should not cause dharma life to be shortened by hundreds of thousands of years. No? Our involvement in dharma should not shorten the life of dharma by hundreds of thousands of years. It should cause the life of dharma to extend and live for hundreds and thousands of extra years. And that is very, very important. Don't you think so? And in the previous text, the Kevajra text, the previous one, in which it is mentioned very clearly, Vajrayana is so sacred and so powerful. If everything goes well, you can attain Buddhahood in one life. If everything goes wrong, the guru and disciple both will become the fuel of the worst hell. So I don't want you to become the fuel of the worst hell. And I don't want you to become the fuel of the worst hell. And if we shorten the life of the Dharma by hundreds of thousands of years, and if we become the cause and condition to deprive the billions and billions of sentient beings from attaining Buddhahood, then what else will happen except to become the fuel of the worst hell? So I sincerely say this as my duty towards all of you, and if you think it is ridiculous, there's nothing I can do except pray, but I hope not. And I hope you understand what I'm saying, and you appreciate it, and you uphold it. Therefore, we doing this Dharma activity will become truly meaningful Dharma activity. Not something look like Dharma activity, but a worldly activity, which looks like a Dharma activity. No, I don't want that. If it is going to be that, I would rather go up and close my door and sleep for next 3 months, okay? So that there will be no empowerment, right? Anyway, everything will be auspicious. Okay.